man who rode ahead, and I saw him reach down for the axe beneath his seat. The girl lunged, too, as the keys were kicked in the bedlam of the prisoner's stampede for freedom. I almost had them in my hand when the girl screamed, "Above you!" I rolled just as an axe splintered the wagon floor where my head had been. I grabbed the handle as he pried it free, and we battled for its control. I made it to my feet, but I had less leverage with one leg chained. "Keep it, you bastard fool!" I yelled and let go of the axe, pushing him. As he stumbled for balance, my arm shot forward, my fist crushing his throat, caving it inward. His eyes bulged, and he fell from the wagon onto his back, his throat wheezing, unable to draw a breath. He was as good as dead, but then another hunter on horseback with a spiked mace in hand doubled back toward us after taking down one of the other prisoners. His eyes were fixed on me. The girl had snatched up the keys in her fist and was trying to fit the key into the lock at our ankles to free us, but I yelled, "Run!" There wasn't time for locks. I grabbed her arm and pulled her with me. We stumbled onto the dirt as the hunter's mace swung over our heads, his horse trampling around us. We scrambled together beneath the wagon just as the mace split the wood over our heads. We crawled to the other side and ran, our paces clumsy with the chain between us. "This way!" I shouted. The hunter was close behind us, but I knew what was up ahead, and I only prayed she could keep step with me. If we stumbled, we were finished. She managed to keep pace, the chain rattling between us, the keys still firm in her grip. The flat plain gave way to a long, steep incline that led to the river below. In one jump, we leapt and rolled, head over heels, tumbling, the shackles cutting into our legs as we pulled apart and came together, in what felt like an endless cascade down the loose dirt, unable to break our fall until we hit a flat crest above the river. "The keys!" the girl shouted. Her hand was empty. She had lost them in the long tumble. We untangled ourselves and got to our feet, both of our ankles bleeding where the irons had cut into them. We looked back up the incline, hoping to see the glint of a rusty key. "Devil's hell," I hissed. The hunter was traversing the steep embankment on his horse, still coming after us. "Ficat vide," the girl growled and glanced behind us for escape. There was nowhere to go but the river, and it was a long way down. "Can you swim?" I asked. "I don't want your dead weight dragging me under."
"Let's go, pretty boy," she said, glaring at me, then jumped, pulling me with her.
Chapter 8. Kazi. Swim? Not well. There were few opportunities in Sanctum City for swimming. The Great River was too cold and too violent. I'd had some training as Rattan, but didn't get past the basics of floating. There was simply nowhere to practice. But his accusing question galled me. Dead weight dragging him under? He was the one who passed the keys to others before freeing us. He was the one who pushed us down an embankment, making me lose the keys. The hunter was quickly approaching, another just behind him with their weapons poised to bash in our heads, or at least disable us enough to drag us back to the wagon. There was no other choice. The river was a long way down, but this time I would be the one doing the pushing. I grabbed his arm and jumped. It seemed forever before we hit, the surface surprisingly hard as we broke through. It viciously slammed into my ribs, and then we were tumbling in the current. I didn't know which way was up, and my lungs were bursting, searching for a breath. I kicked, struggled to find the surface, find air, find the way up, but there were only thousands of bubbles, flashes of light, swirls of darkness, and a vice clamping down on my chest, the last breath I had gulped seeping away as I kicked desperately. And then I felt something gripping my arm, fingers digging in, jerking me upward, and I broke the surface, gasping for air. "Lean back," he yelled. "Cross your legs, feet forward." Jace pulled me so I was between his arms, leaning back against his chest, rapid splashing over us, spinning us, But each time he righted our course and we shot down the river like aimless leaves swept away on its surface. The riverbanks on either side weren't far away, but they were lined with boulders and we were moving too swiftly to risk grabbing onto one. I choked as rapids splashed into my mouth and up my nose. His arms held me tight, pulling me backward when I tried to lean up.
"Relax against me," he ordered. "Go with the current. When it widens and calms, we'll make our way to the side."
His survival depended on mine, and mine on his. We truly were anchors to each other. The only good thing about the fearsome ride was it was taking us far from the labor hunters. The current finally slowed, and stretches of sandy banks began to appear.
"A little farther,"
he said, his face tucked next to mine,
"to make sure they can't follow."
We had already gone a mile down the river or more. My legs throbbed, and I was relieved when he started maneuvering us toward a sandy bank. I finally felt my feet touch bottom, and we both stumbled out. We collapsed on the bank, gasping. My hair was a mass of tangles in front of my face, my heart still pounding. I glanced to the side. He lay next to me on his back, his eyes closed, his chest heaving, and his hair dripping in wet strings. I may have put one threat behind me, but now I was chained to another in the middle of nowhere. There was no pretending that we were friends, and now I had no weapon. Neither did he, but he was undeniably bigger and stronger than me, and I had seen what his fist could do. It was clear I needed to strike at least a temporary truce. Once I caught my breath, I asked, "What now?" His head rolled to the side and he looked at me, a long, searing stare. His eyes were clear, bright. The haze of drink long vanished from them, and his irises were the same deep brown as the earth he was lying on.
"Did you have something in mind?"
he asked. I wasn't sure if it was sarcasm or humor. Maybe both, but his eyes remained locked on mine. An uneven breath squeezed my lungs. "I'm just saying, I know you don't like me, and I don't like you, but until we can be free of each other, I guess we'll have to make the best of it." He blinked, long and slow. Definitely sarcasm and distaste. He turned away and looked up into the sky as if he was thinking it over.
"You have a name?"
he finally asked without looking at me. I paused. I wasn't sure why I felt risky to tell him. It was strangely personal, but I was the one who suggested we make the best of it. "Kazi," I said, waiting for him to deride it.
"And your family name?"
"Vendans don't use surnames. We're known by where we're from. I'm known as Kazi of Brightmist. It's a quarter in Sanctum City." He quietly repeated my name, but said nothing more, staring upward. I was sure he was conjuring all the possible ways he could be rid of me. If only he had that axe to hack away my foot that bound me to him. He finally stood and held his hand out, waiting for me to take it. I cautiously grabbed hold of his wrist, and he helped me to my feet, but he didn't release my arm, tugging me closer instead. He looked down at me.
"And I do have a name, too, even though you're fond of calling me Pretty Boy. Jace Ballinger," he said. "But you probably already knew that, didn't you? Considering you intended to arrest me."
Uneasy seconds passed, his grip still strong. Dark clouds flashed in his eyes. Our truce was off to a shaky start. "The arrest wasn't imminent," I replied. "There were still more questions to ask, accusations to review, and then I would have called you in for further discussion."
"You call me in? Hell's Mouth is my city. Just who do you think you are?"
Your worst nightmare, Jace Ballinger, I fumed, but I molded my words into a calm reply. Do you want to make the best of this or not? He sucked in a slow, heated breath and swallowed his next words. He released my arm and turned, taking in our surroundings as though he was appraising our situation.
All right, then, Cassie of Bright Mist. Let's see if we can make the best of it and get out of here.
His gaze jumped to the ridge on the opposite bank, then back to the forest behind us. He pointed to his left.
I think...
He shook his head and his fingers shifted slightly to the right.
I think there's a settlement in that direction. Closest civilization we're going to find that doesn't put us right back in the hunter's path. Maybe 100 miles.
100 miles? Chained? Barefoot? With no weapons or food? And with someone who was about as trustworthy as a merchant's wink. But I was sure survival was on his mind, too. What kind of settlement? I asked.
The only kind that's out here. One of yours.
There was no attempt to hide his disapproval. I looked in the direction he had pointed, still uncertain. Where's Hell's Mouth from here? I asked.
Other side of the river, where the hunters are, and more than a day's ride east.
A day? Had I been knocked unconscious for that long? My stomach rumbled in confirmation, and his conclusion rang with some truth. There was another Vendon settlement far west of Islandia. Caswell was one of the first and largest settlements, several hundred strong. They would have the supplies and resources to help me, in one way or another. The chain rattled between us, and he shifted on his feet.
Well? He asked. You have a better idea?
Not at the moment. We'll head toward the settlement, I answered.
But,
he said, taking a step closer, his eyes narrowing.
Here's the real question. If I get you back to civilization, you still think you're going to call me in for further discussion?
Was that a veiled threat? If I get you back? The chain firmly connecting us now seemed like a blessed assurance I wouldn't be bludgeoned the minute I turned my back. Everything about his stance was smug confidence. This was a game for him. A challenge. I'd bite. I'd be a fool to answer that now, wouldn't I, considering my predicament? An amused huff jumped from his chest.
I'd say you'd be a fool not to.
I stared at him, trying to judge how much was bluster and how much genuine threat. Then shall we simply agree to go our separate ways once we reach the settlement? No foul, no gain.
Separate ways, he said. Agreed.
We got our last drinks at the river since we didn't know when we would come across fresh water again. And then I stopped to tow some small rocks I spotted on the bank. I picked one up, turning it over in my hand.
That for me?
He asked. I glanced up. This time, humor. A grin lit his eyes. He was impossible to predict, which only added to my misgivings. Quarter lords and their greedy egos were as easy to forecast as a snowy day in winter. Every exchange of words between Jace and me seemed like a dance, a step forward, a step back, circling, both of us leading, anticipating, wondering what the next move would be. He didn't trust me any more than I trusted him. Flint, I answered. And my buckle is fire steel. The hunters may have relieved me of my valuables, but at least my belt was worthless to them. A fire will be welcome tonight. He looked at my buckle, a brown oval of metal shaped like a serpent, and nodded his approval of this development.
a step forward. Then I better keep my eyes open for some dinner. He stepped toward the forest to leave.
Hold up, I said. Before we go, I need you to turn around.
What?
I need to pee. Turn around.
We just got out of a river. Why didn't you pee there?
Maybe because I was doing this little thing called fighting for my life.
You mean I was fighting for your life. You just went along for the ride.
Turn around, I ordered.
Turn my back on you?
I smiled. Don't worry, I answered, spitting his own words back into his face. I wouldn't want to be chained to a dead weight. You're safe, pretty boy.
I don't even get a riddle first?
I narrowed my eyes. He slowly turned.
Hurry.
I had done more humiliating things, I supposed, but at the moment I couldn't remember what they were. I took care of my business quickly. Making the best of it was not going to be easy. When he turned around again, he reached toward me and I flinched. My hand shot up, ready to strike.
Whoa! Hold on,
he said, pulling back.
I was just going to take a look at your face. You've got quite a shiner blooming there.
I reached up and touched my jaw, feeling the heat of a fresh bruise. He shrugged.
I'm not saying it wasn't worth it. You got your hands on the keys. But it makes me wonder, is there anything you won't do to get what you want?
I eyed him cautiously. Some things, I answered, but not many.
Chapter 9. Jace.
I grabbed a long branch of driftwood, tossed up on the bank, and broke it in two, handing one to her. It would serve as both walking stick and protection if we needed it. I doubted the hunters would cross the river after us. We were only a commodity to them, and it would cost them less time and trouble to ensnare new victims. But there were four-legged threats out here, too. We'll sharpen them later, I said. We set out through the forest, maneuvering through the dense maze of yellow-ringed spirit trees. The trunks were thin, none much wider than my arm, but they grew closely, making our path an ever-constant zigzag. The floor of the forest was a thick mat of decaying leaves, a soft cushion on our bare feet. Other parts of the journey wouldn't be this easy. We faced a river of scorching sand ahead, but if I paced it right, we would travel over it in the cool of night. It was a gamble when I told her about the direction of the settlement. I wasn't sure how well she knew the terrain. Even if she did, it was easy to confuse one forest or plateau with another out here, and she'd been unconscious the whole time in the hay wagon. My gamble paid off. She didn't know where we really were, east or west of Hell's Mouth. I thought she'd go along easier if she thought she was headed for a Venden settlement. The alternative was to carry her trussed up over my shoulder the whole way, which would take even longer. It was already going to take too long as it was. The river had taken us way off course, and we wouldn't be able to move fast with this chain between us, especially without shoes. She wouldn't like where we were going, which brought me some satisfaction, as there was little else to be satisfied with at the moment. I needed to get home fast. More than ever, this was a time the family needed to be pulling together, showing a unified front. We needed to be fortifying our positions. Scouts had already been sent to outlying posts, watching for threats. Other leagues were always vying for a piece of Hell's Mouth's lucrative trade, hoping to displace the Ballingers. Paxton was a wolf sniffing the air for blood every time he came to town. If I wasn't there, he'd sense weakness and whistle for more of his pack to follow. The same with the other league leaders. They would know something was wrong. The town would become restless, too, wondering where I was. Every day, every minute I was gone only made my problems multiply. The others would be covering for me, searching, hoping for the best, and putting on a show that all was well. Funeral plans would have to proceed. My fingers curled into my palm, wishing I could hit something.
Today would be the preparation and wrapping of my father's body. My family would be doing it without me. Tomorrow, the tomb would be opened and cleaned, a lantern lit and a daily prayer offered up by family in anticipation of his entombment. And in 2 weeks, his body would be laid on the internment stone for the final goodbye, viewing, and sealing ceremony. And then, once the tomb was shut and sealed, the priestess would say a blessing over the new patre. But I wouldn't be there. Visitors gathered to pay their respects would wonder at my absence, and the fears and whispers would run rampant. So would the wolves. My family was at risk. So was the town. All because of her. I wondered if she was truly Ratan. Yes, she was skilled, but she didn't exactly possess brawn, even if she had managed to overtake me and slam me up against the wall. But juggling? Riddles? Her age? Her poise and demeanor was that of a cynical, tested soldier, but her appearance? She was young. Younger than me, I was certain. Her black hair fell in thick, long waves, and her hands were delicate, her fingers more suited for a piano than a sword, or for slipping keys from a belt. My doubts doubled, and I glanced sideways at her. Her cheeks were flushed with warmth, but she kept step with my brisk pace. I thought about the queen who had sent her, and my father's last words. Make her come. The leagues will notice. It will validate our position on this continent. The lesser kingdoms and territories hadn't been part of the battle, but everyone knew of the war between the greater kingdoms and the queen who had led a vastly outnumbered army to an astonishing victory. She could have plucked from any number of skilled soldiers or chosen assassins from three kingdoms to investigate treaty violations. Why this girl? Do you actually know the queen? I asked. Her glance at me was sharp, but her one-word answer was languid. Yes. Even in one simple word, I heard 100 nuances, most of them haughty, condescending, and superior. How did you meet? She paused, considering her reply. I met her when I pledged as a soldier. A lie? You know her well? Quite well. More questions only produced more terse answers, and I wasn't sure any were true. I stopped abruptly and stepped in her path to block her. The question I promised myself I wouldn't ask, bubbling up anyway. Why don't you like me? She stared at me, confused. What? Back at the river, you said that you don't like me. I want to know why. She rolled her eyes like it was obvious and tried to sidestep around me. Again, I moved to block her path. She looked at me then, her eyes as smooth and calm as a summer sea, and said, without blinking, Because you're an opportunist. You're a cheat. You're a thief. Shall I go on? My back stiffened, but I forced myself to deliver an unruffled reply. Wouldn't those all be the same thing? There are differences. Can we walk and talk at the same time? Maybe you're right, I replied, and we fell back into step. I guess it would take a real thief to know the subtleties. I saw you steal those oranges. She laughed. Did you now? I paid for those oranges. You and your bunch of thugs were too drunk and full of yourselves to see anything beyond your own inebriated noses. I can see your kind coming a mile away. My kind? I squared my shoulders, struggling to remain calm. She had no respect or fear for the Ballingers, and I wasn't used to it. You don't know anything about me. I know enough. I've read the long list of your violations. Skimming merchants, caravan raids, stealing livestock, intimidation. I stepped in front of her path, blocking her again. Ah, so there you have it, a list with the Venden twist. Do your kind have any idea how hard it is to survive out here in the middle of everything and everyone, surrounded by kingdoms on all sides? Everyone thinking it's their right to enter your territory and take what they want, moving in at the slightest sign of weakness? My world is not your world. My temples burned and my voice rose. Vendans sit behind their high, safe walls at the far edge of a continent, scribbling out new treaties and training their pretty, smart-mouthed elite soldiers who have no idea what it's like to fight to survive. I lowered my voice to a growl. And you, Cassie of Brightmist, have no understanding of the trouble you've caused me. I should be home with my family, protecting them, and instead I'm out here, chained to you! My chest heaved with anger, and I waited for a caustic comeback, but instead she blinked slowly and replied, I may know more about survival than you think. Her pupils were deep black wells floating in a calm circle of amber, but her hands betrayed her, stiff at her sides, ready to strike. A war raged inside her, one she held back, biting it off like a poisonous snake with disturbing self-control. Let's go, I said. Our worlds had an impassable gulf between them. It was useless to try to make her understand. We walked in silence, the clank of the chain between us suddenly amplified. Her steely control made me angry at myself for losing mine. It wasn't like me. That was one of the reasons my father gave for naming me Patre. I wasn't the oldest, but I was the least impulsive. It was a strength my father valued. I weighed the advantages and costs of every word and action before I acted. Some saw me as aloof. Mason said with admiration that it made me a stone-cold bastard. But this girl had pushed me to a reckless burning edge I didn't even recognize. And her calm reply only pushed me further. She knew something about survival. I wondered if she might even know more than me.
Each other. Hold on to each other because that is what will save you. I hold back tears because others are watching, already terrified. I pile handfuls of dirt, brush, rocks, thing upon thing until his body is hidden. It is the best I can do, but I know animals will find him by nightfall. By then, he will be far behind us. How many more will I have to bury? I shout into the air, a rush of tears and anger breaking loose. No more of us, I scream. The anger feels good, saving, a weapon when I have nothing else. I shove a stick into a hand, and then another and another until even the youngest holds one. Miandre balks. I squeeze my hand around hers until she winces, forcing her to take hold of her club. If we die, we will die fighting. Grayson Ballinger, 14. Chapter 10. Cassie.
I should be with my family. He'd been silent for an hour now. His father's death had come as a surprise to me, and now I guessed it had been unexpected for him, too. Even if Carson Ballinger was the ruthless outlaw who harbored a stable of ruffians, as the King of Islandia had reported, he was still Jace's father, and he'd only been dead for 2 days. I doubted that Jace cared whether I liked him or that I called him a thief, but he did care about his family, and he was not there with them to bury his father, or whatever it was they did with the dead in Hell's Mouth. In the last months of the Komizar's reign, I had watched Ren when she grieved her parents' deaths. I saw her fall on their bloody bodies, slaughtered in the town square, screaming for them to get up, hitting their lifeless chests and begging for them to open their eyes. I had seen Sinove days after her parents' deaths, her eyes wide, unseeing, numb, and beyond tears. It had been odd to envy their grief, but I had. I envied the explosion and finality of it, their sobs and tears. At that point, my mother had been gone for 5 years, and I had never grieved her death, never cried, because I never saw her die. Her passing came slowly over months and years in the dull bits, pieces, and mundane hours that I worked to stay alive. Day by day she faded, as every stall I searched turned up nothing, and another piece of her drifted away. Every hovel and home I snuck into held no part of her, no amulet, no scent, no sound of her voice. The memories of her became disconnected, blurred images, warm hands cupping my cheeks, a tuneless hum as she worked, words that floated in the air, her finger pressed to my lips. Shh, Kazi, don't say a word. I wondered if Jace had missed his chance to grieve too. A one-night drunk was hardly a goodbye. I'm sorry about your father, I said. His steps faltered, but he kept walking, his only reply a nod. How did he die? His jaw clenched, and his reply was quick and clipped. He was a man, not a monster, as you imagine. He died the way all men die, one breath at a time. He was still angry. He still grieved. His pace quickened, and I knew the topic was closed. Another hour passed. My legs ached trying to keep pace with him, and my ankle was raw from the shackle. The thin fabric of my trousers was little protection against the heavy metal. I kept my eyes open for some bay fern or wish stalks to make a balm, but this forest seemed to have only trees and nothing else.
You're limping, he said, suddenly breaking the silence.
Those weren't the first words I expected from him, but everything about him was unexpected. It made me wary. It's only the uneven terrain, I answered, but I noticed his pace slowed.
How's your head?
He asked. My head? I reached up, gently pressing the knot and wincing. I'll live.
I watched you in the wagon. Your chest. For a while, I didn't see it move at all. I thought you were dead.
I didn't quite know how to respond. You were watching my chest? He stopped and looked at me, suddenly looking awkward and young and not like a ruthless killer at all.
I mean, he began walking again. What I meant was, I was watching to make sure you were still breathing. You were out cold.
I smiled, somewhere deep inside so he wouldn't see. It was refreshing to see him flustered for a change. And why would you care if I was breathing?
I was chained to you.
The hard reality. Oh, right, I answered, feeling slightly deflated. No fun being attached to a corpse. Dead weight and all.
I also knew you might be useful. I'd seen your quick—
He paused as if he regretted the admission, so I finished his thought for him. Takedown? When I nailed you against the wall back in Hell's Mouth?
Yes.
At least there was some degree of honesty in him. When we came upon a brook in the afternoon, we stopped to rest. The forest was thinning, and there was little shade, the sun unforgiving. Jace said he thought we'd soon be out of the forest altogether, and crossing the open plateau of Heath. I looked up, judging the sun's place in the sky. Only a few hours of daylight left. The cool of night would be welcome, but the prospect of an open plateau, a wide night sky, and sleeping without a tent was already a beast running a warning claw down my back. A tent. It was ludicrous to think of that now. Get a grip on yourself, Kazi, I thought. But it wasn't that simple and never had been. It was not something I could just talk myself out of, no matter how many times I tried. Maybe we should stop here for the night, I suggested. Jace squinted at the sun.
No,
We can get a few more hours of walking in. I reluctantly nodded. I knew he was right. The sooner to the settlement, the sooner I got back to Hell's Mouth so the others would know I was still alive and the whole mission wasn't abandoned. He was eager to get there, too. In spite of dragging a 3-foot length of chain between us, his pace had never lagged until he noted my limp. But sleeping out there, utterly exposed, it would be hard enough to sleep under the cover of these skimpy trees as it was. A loose breath skittered through my lungs. I dipped my hands into the brook, splashing my face, taking a drink and picturing myself a week from now, back in the middle of a crowded city. Jace knelt beside me and fully dunked his head in the shallow water, scrubbing his face and neck. When he surfaced and smoothed back his hair, I saw the gash over his brow from when the hunters trapped him. The cut was small, and the dried blood that had crusted his face was gone now, but it made me wonder why he had wanted me to follow him down that empty street in Hell's Mouth. What had been his plan for me before he had been intercepted by the hunters? I didn't think it was to share a cup of tea. I rinsed my neck and arms with more cool water, wishing the brook was deep enough to take a whole bath. But then I caught the silver flash of something even better. Minnows! A few feet away, dozens of shiny minnows darted in a dark pool of water created by a cluster of rocks. Dinner? Jace said, his tone hopeful. We hadn't come across any berries or fungus or even a squirrel to spear with our walking sticks. Our only prospect for dinner had been water, so the fish, however small, lifted my spirits and, it seemed, his too. But catching the slippery angels was another matter. Take off your shirt, I said. We can each hold a side of the fabric and corral them. We'll use it as a net. He eagerly pulled his shirt over his head, and my excitement for the minnows was replaced with discomfort. Wondering if I should look away, but we were chained in close proximity and a strange curiosity took hold. He held his shirt in his hand, and I watched the water dripping from his hair trickle down, traversing his chest, abdomen, and the muscles that defined them. I swallowed. It explained the force of his punch when he killed the hunter, and his grip when he pulled me into his arms in the river and held me against him. A winged tattoo fluttered over his right shoulder, across his chest, and down his arm. My mouth suddenly felt dry. Sinove would have plenty to say about this if she were here, but my thoughts and words stalled on my tongue. He caught me staring.
It's part of the Ballinger crest, he said.
Now it was me who was flustered, and I felt my cheeks flush warm. He lifted his hand to the corner of his mouth, trying to stifle a smile, which only made me squirm more. I snatched his shirt from his hand. Let's catch some dinner, shall we?
Chapter 11. Jace.
It took several tries to catch the slimy bastards. They were clever and easily darted past our makeshift net, but together we eventually perfected our technique, sneaking forward in unison, allowing the fabric to billow so we could scoop them up. I hooted when we snagged our first catch of two, and with several more sweeps, we had a few dozen of the skinny, 4-inch fish piled on the bank. They weren't much, but right now my stomach thought they looked like a juicy roasted pig. Cooked or raw? She asked as she lifted one to her mouth. I pushed her hand down before she could eat it. Cooked, I said firmly, not trying to hide my disgust. The last thing I'd had in my stomach was a barrel of ale, and squirming fish were not going to swim in it. Don't look at me like I'm a savage, she snapped. We simply have different eating tastes, and mine include dead game. I worked on the fire while she began skewering the fish onto two sticks for roasting. As the minnows sizzled over the fire, she looked at my chest again, this time leisurely, not looking away when I noticed.
Is that an eagle? She asked.
Part of one.
Tell me about the crest. What does it stand for? She asked. I didn't know you even had one.
Of course she didn't. She knew nothing about us. It's hard to tell you about the crest without telling the whole Ballinger history, and I doubt you want to hear that, considering your low opinion of us.
Try me. I like history.
I shot her a skeptical glance, but she sat there attentive and waiting. It began with the first Ballinger, the leader of all the ancients.
All?
Her brows rose, already disputing the claim. That's right. Years after the last days,
you mean the devastation?
I knew there were a lot of different versions and words used to describe the gods' revenge against the world. All right, the devastation. But you can't interrupt me after every word. She nodded and listened quietly while I told her that the leader of the ancients, Aaron Ballinger, had gathered a surviving remnant spared by the gods, most of them children, and was leading them to a place where they would be safe. But before they could reach Tor's watch, they were attacked by scavengers and he died. As he lay dying, he charged his grandson, Grayson, with leading the group the rest of the way. Grayson found this symbol, I explained, sliding my hand over my chest. When they reached Tor's watch, at least a version of it, at the entrance to a secure shelter, and he adopted it as the Ballinger crest. So he was your first leader?
Yes.
He was only 14 and had to look after 22 people he didn't know, but they became family. The crest has changed over the generations, but some parts are constant, like the eagle and the banner.
And the words?
She asked, gesturing at my arm.
I shrugged.
We don't know what they mean, exactly. It's a lost language, but to us they mean protect and defend at all costs.
Even death?
All costs means all. I glanced up at the sky. It was already a dusky purple, and a few stars were beginning to shine. Too late to leave now. We'll have to make camp here for the night. She nodded, and almost looked relieved. The sun had been gone for hours, and we stared at the small fire crackling at our feet. Light flickered on the yellow-ringed trunks surrounding us.
I've never seen trees like this. So many and so thin, she said.
Legend says the forest grew from bone dust and that every tree holds the trapped soul of someone who died in the devastation. That's why they bleed red when you cut them.
She shivered. That's a gruesome thought.
I told her a few other legends that were less gruesome, ones about the forests and mountains surrounding Tor's watch, and even a story about the towering Tembris, which became the footstools of the gods and held the magic of the stars.
Where'd you learn all these stories?
I grew up with them. I spent a lot of my childhood outdoors exploring every corner of Tor's watch, usually with my father. He told me most of the stories.
What about you?
What was your childhood like? Her gaze darted to her lap, a furrow deepening over her brow. She finally lifted her chin with a proud air.
Much like yours, she answered. I spent a lot of time outdoors.
She ended the conversation, saying it was probably time that we got some sleep. But she didn't. I stretched out and closed my eyes, but time after time when I opened them, she still sat there, hunched, her arms hugging her knees. Had my story about spirits trapped in trees spooked her? It was strange to see her looking so vulnerable now, and yet earlier she'd been aggressively reckless when she told the hunter a riddle, challenging him, knowing he would strike her. There hadn't been a drop of fear in her then, when all odds were against her. I wondered if this was some sort of trick. Was she up to something? It's hard to sleep if you don't lie down, I finally said. She reluctantly lay down, but her eyes remained open, her chest rising in deep, controlled breaths, as if she were counting them. Her arms trembled, but the night was warm. This was no trick.
Are you cold?
I asked. I can add more branches to the fire if you need it.
She blinked several times like she was embarrassed that I had noticed. No, I'm fine, she said. But she wasn't fine at all. I studied her for a minute, then said, tell me a riddle, to help me sleep. She balked, but only a little, and it seemed she was happy to have something else to occupy her mind besides what had been lurking there. She rolled onto her side to face me, settling in, comfortable. Listen carefully, she said. I won't repeat it a dozen times like I did for the hunter. You won't need to. I'm a good listener. She said the words slowly, deliberately, like she was imagining the world behind the picture she painted. I watched her lips as she formed each word, her voice relaxed and soft, once again confident, her golden eyes watching mine, making sure I paid attention and missed nothing. My face is full, but also slight. I pale in the bright of light. I whisper sweet to the forest owl. I kiss the air with wolf's sad howl. Eyes follow me from sea to sea. Yet alone in this world, I will ever be. I stared at her, swallowed, my thoughts suddenly jumbled. Well? She asked. I knew the answer, but I drew it out, offering several wrong answers, making her laugh once. It was the first time I had seen her laugh, genuine, without any pretense, and it filled me with a strange burst of heat. The moon, I finally answered. Our gazes held, and she seemed to know what I was doing. Tell me another one, I said. And she did. A dozen more, until her lids grew heavy, and she finally fell asleep.
Prepare your hearts, for we must not only be ready for the enemy without, but also the enemy within. Song of Jezelea. Chapter 12, Kazi.
I woke to weight pinning me down, the heat of skin on mine, a hand over my mouth. Shh, don't move. Jace's face hovered next to mine. I jerked, but his weight pushed harder. And then I heard it. Footsteps, the crunch of leaves, a breath. Jace's mouth pressed close to my ear, a bare whisper. Don't move, no matter what. Leaves stirred, careless footsteps, heavy steps that didn't care about noise. The sky above us was still dark, just tinged with dawn, the black silhouette of trees barely lacing an outline above us. Jace's face was a shadow near mine, and his heart pounded against my chest. Something large lumbered toward us, hulking, a mountain of swaying black. Each footfall trembled through me. Jace couldn't speak now, it was too close, but I felt the strain of his muscles willing me to freeze. It went against every instinct I had. Run, Kazi, hide! But I froze beneath his weight, sweat springing between our bodies. The creature sniffed the air, saw us, and its mouth opened wide, a gaping cavern of enormous teeth, and a terrible roar split the forest. My muscles tensed, but Jace held me tight, still. It drew closer, so close that its heaving breaths touched our skin. The smell noxious and suffocating, like all the furnaces of hell bellowed from within. A warning grumble vibrated from it, its mouth tasting the air, tasting us, its tongue rolling over our skin. It huffed as if disappointed and turned away. We didn't move as dawn crept over us, but when the creature's footsteps had finally faded, Jace let out a long-held breath, and his hand slid from my mouth.
He looked down at me, our faces still close, and the moment splintered, out of step, tumbling into long, frozen seconds, his chest still beating against mine. He blinked as though he was finally oriented again, and rolled off, lying on the ground next to me.
I didn't mean to crush you, he said. There wasn't time to wake you up. Are you all right?
Was I? The fear was ebbing, and yet my pulse still raced. I still felt the pressure of his body on mine and the burn of his skin. Yes, I said, my voice hoarse. What was that? He explained it was a Kendok bear, and they preferred fish to people, but there was no outrunning or killing them if they perceived you as a threat. If you made no sudden moves, they would usually leave you alone. Usually. I felt like Ren now, understanding the certainty she wanted when it came to Raka and their meat preferences, especially when I still had the memory of the bear's hellish wet tongue sampling my face.
We should go in case it comes back, Jace said, getting to his feet.
But in two steps he stumbled and fell, the chain jerking between us. He cursed.
I forgot about this thing.
He got back to his feet and grabbed his shirt from the rock where he had laid it to dry the night before. I watched as he put it on, seeing the inked feathers on his skin disappear beneath the fabric. And I thought about how he had forgotten about the chain and the dead weight he was attached to, and yet he had protectively hovered over me anyway. Over the next few days, we fell into a surprisingly easy rhythm. There was rarely silence, and for that I was grateful. He told me about other animals that lived in this region. There were several deadly ones I hadn't yet had the pleasure to meet. He hoped we would come across a mimole mound, a sign of a meaty, tasty bird that tunneled and nested beneath the soil in this area. He eyed the sharpened end of his walking stick, saying the bird wasn't hard to spear. How do you know so much about this region? I asked, my hand sweeping the horizon.
It's Ballinger territory, too.
Way out here? This has to be more than 100 miles from Tor's Watch.
Could be.
I grunted, but said nothing else. My silence poked and stabbed between us. He finally sighed, and a sardonic grin pulled at his mouth.
All right, Kazi of Bright Mist. Tell me, just what is your definition of a thief?
His tone wasn't angry. It seemed more like a genuine entreaty to understand me, and I wondered if he had been pondering it ever since I called him a thief a few days ago. The Venden definition is no different than anyone else's. You take things that don't belong to you.
Such as?
Livestock.
You're talking about the shorthorn we took from the Vendens? It was payment for trespassing.
You weren't entitled to even one shorthorn, but it was far more than that. It was everything. You burned their fields, destroyed their pens, took their supplies. He shook his head.
One shorthorn. That was it. The rest is Venden embellishment.
I saw the damage myself.
Then someone else did it, not us.
I glanced at his profile, wondering if he was lying. A vein twitched in his neck, and he seemed absorbed by what I said. This news troubled him, or maybe it was just me who troubled him. I didn't let up. What about the merchant caravans you raid?
Only under certain circumstances when they cross into our territory.
You mean if they cross you? He stopped and faced me.
That too.
There was no apology in his expression. His easy tone was gone. But you have no defined borders. You aren't even supposed to be settled in the Kamlanto at all. You're breaking the law. It's a violation of the ancient treaties. How can you lay claim to all of this?
Well, maybe the ancient treaties never bothered to consult us. Tor's watch has been here longer than any of the kingdoms, including Venda. And we do have borders, but maybe our lines are drawn differently than yours. They extend as far as it takes for us to feel secure. We've lived by our laws and survived by them for centuries. Venda has no right to be meddling. What about your meddling? The businesses you skim in Hell's Mouth? Is that one of your laws, too? The color deepened at his temples. Hell's Mouth was ours long before it became part of Islandia. We built the city from rubble and ruins, and we protect everyone who lives there. No one gets a free ride. Protect them from what? He looked down at the chain between us. Do I really need to give you a list? Ours is a different world than yours. My family doesn't need to explain anything to Venda.
I was ready to argue more, to point out that Hell's Mouth was in Islandia, and it was their jurisdiction to protect as they saw fit, not the Ballingers who extracted fear money. But I tried to remember that my primary goal wasn't to educate him, but to obtain information, and his ire was growing. Soon, we'd revert to silence. He had already told me some of the Ballinger history, but now I wondered about his family, which he had mentioned more than once. It was a driving motivation in his life, and I contemplated the prospect of meeting a whole family of thugs who possibly harbored a dangerous traitor. For what purpose would they give him refuge? It seemed everything was a transaction for the Ballingers. No free rides. What were they getting out of it? I softened my tone, trying to redirect the conversation. I already recognized his tics, the straight, firm line of his lips, his nostrils flaring, the muscles in his neck tightening, his wide shoulders pulling back. His enormous pride and ego when it came to his family was his weakness, and I needed to understand it because for a thief, understanding and exploiting your opponent's shortcomings was the first rule of the game. And he was my opponent. I needed to remind myself of that because he hadn't turned out to be what I expected. And some part of me found him... I wasn't sure what the word was. Maybe the safest one was intriguing. But as he spoke of his family, they didn't seem like a weakness at all. Maybe it was just the sheer number of them that astounded me. No one had families that large in Venda. Ever. Besides his mother, he had 6 brothers and 3 sisters. There were also aunts, uncles, and cousins. More extended family lived in the city. He told me their names, but there were far too many to remember them all, save a few. Gunnar and Titus were his oldest brothers. Priya, his sister, was the oldest of the siblings. And Nash and Lydia, who were only 6 and 7, were his youngest, still too young to sit in on family meetings. The meetings were a formal affair where the whole family gathered together around a table to decide on family business. They voted on all major decisions.
And there's Mason, too, Jace added. He's another brother. Same age as me, 19. My parents took him in when he was only 3 after his parents died. We're the only family he's ever known. He votes, too.
And what's your role in this?
As Patre, I make the final decision.
You can overrule the vote of the family?
Yes, if I were there. But as you may have noted, I haven't even had a full day as Patre yet.
And that's the trouble you think I've caused. His response was an affirmative silence, but then he added,
I shouldn't have gone down that alley alone, but I only expected to encounter you, not hunters, so I waved off my Straza.
Straza? He explained they were personal guards. The whole family had them.
You have that many enemies?
When you have power, you have enemies, he answered.